Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hello, it's me, Maria Vasquez Boyd, host and producer of Art Speak Radio, with you every Wednesday, noon to 1, on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your day, listening to us online, kkfi.org, or just on the plain old radio at 90.1 FM. Also, you know, those smartphones that you have in your pocket or in your purse, you can listen to us on TuneIn Radio and other sort of apps like that. So there you go. Happy Diabetes Awareness Day as I drink my water and eat my protein. Just make sure that your blood sugar is checked daily. So I just wanted to say that. We have, as we do every week, we have a beautiful room of very creative, artistic people. Today on tap, we have Andreas Rodriguez, Jamie Heller. We also have Adam Finkelson and Liza Sanborn, Lila Palace, Sydney William, Shawnee Mission East students of his that he's brought into the studio today. Also to round out the hour, Mason Kilpatrick from Charlotte Street Foundation. He's a very good friend of ours, and we love having everyone here today. So thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your day. I want to first introduce Andreas Rodriguez, who is the author of Night Song, Book of the Heart, and Portal of Dreams. His poems and essays have appeared in Bilingual Review, Harvard Review, I-70 Review, Palabra, Sage Tribe, and other journals. In 2007, he won Poets and Writers Maureen Egan Writers Award for Poetry. He has an MA in Creative Writing from Stanford University and a PhD in Literature from the University of California, Santa Cruz. Thank you, because I just wrote Santa. Sorry about that. Jamie Heller, she says poetry is her caffeine. She's a mother, a wife, and teacher who gets up before the house starts to stir to begin writing. Her second collection of work, Buried in the Suburbs, was released by Woodley Press in May of 2018, and her chapbook, Domesticated, Poetry from Around the House, was published in 2015. She is a Pushcart Prize nominee in 2014 and Best of the Net nominee for 2016. She also had pieces selected for Honorable Mention Awards in the Whispering Prairie Press Writing Contest 2012 and the Kansas Voices Contest 2017-2011. So I want to welcome Andreas, Jamie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
Great. You know, not only are you terrific writers and have just some beautiful works of poetry, we also want to talk about an upcoming event that's taken place. But tell me where you want to start, where you want to begin. Oh, that's a loaded question. Well, you know, I could just say that You brought some work today that you can read and share with our listeners, right? What are we looking at on Sunday? Just new poetry,
I hope Jamie will like me read from her new collection. Uh-huh. We're both Woodley Press authors as of 2018. And a mix of poems also from the previous collections to give people a greater sense of the range of work that we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Jamie?
I'm hoping to just help put poetry out there. I teach high school and so enjoy seeing students writing, the excitement that I see with them writing online, but I just love to be able to have the chance to read and share with other people as much as we can. Andreas has been a mentor of mine for several years, and I'm very honored to be reading with him.
Terrific. Yeah, so I can tell our listeners that on Sunday, November 18th, you'll both be reading at the Writer's Place from 3 to 4 in the afternoon, and that's at 3607 Pennsylvania. Yeah. There's a history of that place, of readings there. I know, especially for you, Andreas, with so many of your works, and I think you've held some workshops there too, writing workshops.
You know, it's real unique in Kansas City. You know, many other large urban areas have multiple writing centers or writing programs, mm-hmm. or combined artistic centers. And so, you know, the Writer's Place has been filling a gap for a long, long time. We're strong in many of the other arts in Kansas City, music and dance, but writing has been kind of a slowly evolving thing, and thank God the Writers' Place has had longevity there and has branched into many areas. And I was lucky enough that someone invited me several years ago to start participating in reading events.
And then the Writers' Place for me was really the support and foundation that I got to start publishing. I had that itch to return to writing, didn't know what to do, didn't know how to find my way, didn't know where to start, and so I signed up for a couple workshops through the Writer's Place, and that's how I met Andres, and ended up taking two workshops there and making connections with people and finding this wonderful writing community, because sometimes I think when you write, you feel very alone.
Yeah.
In your room, in the computer, maybe at a coffee shop, but you're still feel very alone, and I've learned the importance of finding that community.
Mm-hmm. I would totally agree with that. I think the Writer's Place also offered a lot of writers early in their career the opportunity to share and sort of kind of fine-tune their writing, because of the workshops, and then just the performance of being, on in front of an audience. Have you noticed in both of your careers as writers, have you noticed a shift in writing? Is there a sort of a trend now that you see now that wasn't happening a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago in writing?
I would say I see a trend towards short. Shorter pieces, direct pieces, something that can fit on a iPhone screen.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Something that is Twitterable, if that's a word.
Yeah.
Those short kind of attention pieces and not so much those long pieces that you can kind of sink into.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of students will write, especially those quick grab, they want those attention-seeking lines rather than something that's developed further or longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what about you, Andres?
I think poets will always be, searching and exploring what has made poetry timeless, which is, verbal expression, imagination. I think the technology's obviously had a big impact on the distribution of work. Many writing programs these days, so I'm told, are very much tailored toward publishing on the internet, and so that's just a reality of the state of the art these days. But when all said and done, I think people still should be locking themselves in a room and reading all of the poets of the past to figure out what it is they're going to do to make their voice unique, but also to be part of a greater mosaic of voices.
Yeah, I would agree. I know my friend Miguel Morales and I had this conversation as we were driving to Waverly, Missouri, working with migrant farm workers, and he's a prolific writer himself, and we were talking about that, the sort of attention span and writing and how it's even sort of spilled onto the screen, on programs on television that you watch and that. I mean, it's just sort of small attention span, I guess, is what we were noticing. But, I love a really good poem, and I love a long poem. Do you have some work that you want to read for us, Jamie?
Go ahead, Jamie.
This is one of my favorite pieces, and I think it kind of captures what I often do and use poetry for, which is I consider verbal photographs. So I'm trying to capture a moment in time, but more than a photograph, to capture the feelings and the emotions that go with it. But very often I write in order to hang on to something that's occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And this piece is called Kansas Rides. I gripped the under curve of metal lining the bed of his farm battered truck to keep from getting tossed out and lost in the prairie sea. The hot wind in my hair carried the breath of the land in bloom, and hours later in bed, my pillow would absorb the scent to keep me company. I could see the bald curve of his head through the back window. The tip of a toothpick pricked his silhouette, one hand on the wheel, his left arm from shirt sleeve to watch band, a longtime partner of the Sun's. It didn't matter where he went or what chore waited, I went along and rode the fields.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Andreas, do you have something that you want to read for us?
I do, but I got to switch glasses.
That's okay. Well, I'll just say this to our listeners. If you just tuned in, this is ArtSpeak Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm here speaking with writers Andreas Rodriguez and Jamie Heller. They're going to have a reading this Sunday, performing some of the work, or reading some of the work, Sunday at the Writer's Place, November 18th. That's going to be 3 to 4 p.m., and that's at 3607 Pennsylvania, just right behind the Uptown Theater. So, yeah.
I live here in Midtown and have lived here all my life, except when I was in college, and people from Midtown know that it's a very dynamic place. But you know, there are real moral and social lesions that you see, and in my neighborhood anyway, there's a lot of homelessness. Mm-hmm. When I lived in California as a student, it was very, very common to see. I lived in the Bay Area to see a lot of homeless people. It surprised me coming home years later to see how it was prevalent everywhere. And this is a poem that kind of recognizes that reality. There's a block of poems in this new collection, which are all voices of people from different places and different time periods. And this is a poem in the voice of a man. It's called Letter from Midtown. And the epigraph says, taped to the window of a public storage building. Looking for the girl who stood in line with me, 7-Eleven, last April. Maine in armor. We talked about snow, highest stop signs, and blowing this town. December in Orlando. Sat together in the parking lot. Twinkies, beer, and smokes. Remember? Forgot your name. Sounded like Haiti. I see with my ears, and they work slow. Been gone 6 months. Home in South Dakota. Nothing but snow. Rusted cars, and no job. The oil rigs, silos, Kmarts, all different now. Ghosts on the headlands. Only your laugh, coming on the air, 500 miles away, day after day, runs through me. Left 2 weeks ago, burned my tracks, hoping to meet again, ready for ocean, a bed on the beach. If you see this, look for me in coin laundries, Mickey D's, bus shelters, tunnels where I sleep, my car dead on I-29, tagged and towed by now. I'm here and there, John Buffalo, a bit thinner, leave reply.
Nice. Wow.
Thank you.
So,
wow.
It's a kind of a found poem. I mean,
yeah.
Everything I write is literally true, although... Mm-hmm. Totally reorganized and reimagined.
Yeah. Reconstituted. I love it.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was this letter on, just posted there, and it was very arresting to see that this man was sort of searching for a connection.
It really touches, you know, so many different emotions, evokes so much, you know, feeling. And that's the power of words. I mean, you know... And it's beautiful when that happens, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think the same thing is true of, you know, even with music, you know. Jamie, do you want to read some work? And before I say that, also, too, I want to ask you both if books will be available, your latest collection of books will be available at the Writer's Place at the reading?
Okay. Yes.
Good.
They will be.
Okay, great.
This piece is dedicated to my grandparents. was first published by I-70 Review, and it's called New to the Nursing Home. When I asked her if I could bring her anything, she told me she wanted a peach, like she remembered, easily bruised, juice that made the wasps hover, tenderly filled with promises of him, walking by her father's store. Each morning he would tip his hat and wink, her blush like peaches.
Mm. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, you know, I just, you know, like I mentioned, the power of words. Do you find that, well, of course, through the years, as you began as early writers and all that, how much your voice has changed, or you've allowed it to change, or become more political, or just maybe sort of been a little bit more liberating with your thoughts, or what do you think? What are your thoughts, Jamie?
The voice is hard for me. I try to not constantly be my natural voice, because that's an easy groove to get into. Mm-hmm. But then you constantly feel like you're just confessing to the world, and nobody wants to read your confessions all the time. So then you try to take on other voices of other people while being respectful of who that person is at the same time, and keeping in mind who you're writing to and what the moment is you're trying to capture all come into play. What I ultimately love doing is being able to put together words that somebody else responds to. And when somebody else can look at you and say, oh, you know, I like that, or I remember that, or that prompted me to think of this song, or to me to think of this memory, that's the most exciting piece to me, is when somebody responds to something that you've written and you feel connected with them. That's what I'm going for.
I don't think my voice has changed any in all the years I've written. Textures have changed, colors have changed, and that's a result of being in different places, of traveling, of working different jobs. I don't think, you know, rhythms and the inner quality of a voice changes much, if only maybe to get deeper into the soul or the heart of what you are as a writer and a person. But, you know, realities will play an influence, I guess, if you want to use that word, on both the composition and the reception of a poem, and that's where you can connect to different audiences. But I feel like what works on my imagination and my consciousness more than considerations or concepts of voice is going to be more like reality, physical reality. To me, it just feels impossible, and so as a writer, you try to admit that quality or that reality into your work somehow, or struggle with it.
Well, I know a number of writers and even artists, visual artists, painters, and all that have told me that, you know, they can see their early work and midlife work and more current work, and it almost reads like a journal of where they were in different places in their time. Mm-hmm. So,
oh yeah, okay. Yeah. This is kind of a longish poem, but this is the title poem from the collection. And it's called Portal of a Dream. Better put on the right glasses here. At dawn, I see a shadow crossing your face below the blue repose of skin. It is edgeless, like hummingbird wings, thrumming before they zip through space. Awoken by this flight or my stare, your mouth flutters open, eyes still closed, and then words crack through to tell me where you've been. I was by the sea. A woman there had three babies sleeping inside her. I saw them through her skin. They clung tenderly to each other, so tenderly, each face a future asleep. I helped the woman get in a rowboat to sail the waves alone. As I watched from shore, a storm was growing, and everything got still before it went dark. You fall silent now, gazing at what was. Deep in the quiet, we hold together, entangled again. I dream my way into your voice to find one afternoon's sun-drenched floor. We danced across, bare feet leaving pools that fled once seen. It hurt to face such ordinary brightness, such casual daytime splendor, because I see the end in all things, no matter how hard I try to sing beauty's brief sight. And here I am again, trying to live into what I see. Slim, delicate toes, thick, bony heels. We danced till we saw our faces peering back from the wall mirror. You said our children would be a mixed circuitry of water and earth. Then we saw a face, bred by the late day's shifting hues, gaze back from that portal of glass, luminous as the sea. Though safe in the mooring of arms, I feel low thunder, wings in every corner, shadows to come while we sleep. I resist myself, the absence feared and learned by love. I want to wake and see you bright as sunlight, sharing the room and dawn. I don't have to dream to know how your face reflects the light of water. Maybe one day I'll see the woman of life, changeless and changing, and call to her across the ocean's vast stream.
Simply beautiful. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I just have, we're going to wind up the interview here, but I just want, if you would like to share social media contact information with our listeners in case they want to find out more about you or your publications?
Yeah, I don't have any of that stuff, but I would just encourage people to at least think about supporting the Writer's Place and all of the great writers and performers that are participating in that.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you.
I've got jamielynheller.blogspot.com is a list there, and then at Jamie Lynn Heller on Twitter, but I'm not great at that. I have a lot of extra time on my hands, so that's it. But those two areas, and then Facebook as well.
Beautiful. Well, I know that we'll be looking forward to your reading Sunday, November 18th at the Writer's Place from 3 to 4 in the afternoon, 3607 Pennsylvania. And thank you so much for coming to the show. And please consider a return visit.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, Maria.
You bet. And we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after these messages. You're welcome, Adam.
That's actually true.
So yes, he is definitely not a werewolf, but he is Adam Maybe. Finkelson. He is the Shawnee Mission East art teacher here in the metropolitan area, and he's here again with students. Would you like to introduce your students and students say hello?
Sure. I'm here with Liza Sanborn.
Hello.
And Lila Powlis.
Hi.
And Sydney William.
Hey.
Yay, yay. And you're going to talk about the Creative Co-Lab, which is an award-winning multidisciplinary project directed by you, the Shawnee Mission East art teacher, Adam Finkelston, who is not a werewolf. And with your students, you work with Healthy Rivers Partnership, local artists, designers, scientists, engineers, civic leaders, carpenters, and others to create public exhibitions. Now, the project combines community service, science education, art education, and professional art practice to give students a unique experience. And, you know, congratulations, because this program was awarded the first Arts KC Education Award in 2016, and it's been recognized by arts leaders in the city for its unique approach to arts education. So congratulations to you on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what are some of the public exhibitions you can talk about or share with us, maybe like the first, or how it came apart, you know, came
Well, there's one exhibition at the end of the school years, and it's the first Thursday and Friday of May, down at the Healthy Rivers Partnership. We've actually, which is down in the West Bottoms area. It's on Woodsweather Road. I think it's 801 Woodsweather Road. But we've been showing there and working with Healthy Rivers Partnership for I think about 5 or 6 years now. I've been doing a project similar to this for probably 8 or 9 years, and it's kind of morphed from just a really large field trip that a bunch of students would take, and then we would put together an exhibition at a gallery in the Crossroads. And then about, like I said, about 6 years ago, we started working with Healthy Rivers Partnership, mm-hmm. and then they moved into a warehouse space for their office space down in the West Bottoms, and we started using that as our exhibition space. So it's really wonderful because we're allowed to pretty much do what we want. We can paint the walls. We can hang things from the ceiling. We can do video projections. We can do installation work, and we can do all kinds of then just traditional photographs, paintings, ceramic, you name it, those kinds of things. But then it really allows students to think big about their work and collaborate with other people and incorporate a lot of the other things that they might be interested in, from music to architecture to science to math, into their artwork, and then produce an exhibition that then the public can come to.
Well, you know, and one of the things I think that's really terrific about this program, it's like real working stuff, real working artists, you know, working with the community and different people and collaborating and all that. So I love that it's taken out of the classroom, and so you have that real life sort of experience, right?
Yes. Yeah, I really believe that, you know, we need to spend a lot of time in the classroom, in the studio to make things.
Oh, sure.
But at the same time, I kind of half jokingly like to say that you have to get out of the classroom to learn something every once in a while. And I think especially with the arts, but probably with a lot of things, you need to go see art. It's something that you need to see in person and do with your hands in a space that is not a hallway, or which is fine, but is, you know, just gets, it's more of a real experience too. And also, you know, you kind of see the nitty gritty parts of it too, you know, painting the walls and sweeping the floor. Dusting the shelves, all of those kinds of things that go into an exhibition to give students a more real and practical experience of what making artwork is like, and how artists collaborate with others in the community and be part of a community.
So when you created the Creative Co-Lab, was this in the back of your mind? Because as a working artist yourself, I mean, you know, offering your students that opportunity to really kind of learn, you know, the backstory of what it takes to be an artist, you know, doing all that sort of prep work and whatnot. Did that play into your decision to bring this project into
Yeah, very much
fruition?
So. Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I wanted, I knew I wanted to teach art probably since I was in fifth grade, but I knew that I also wanted to be an artist who taught. And so I wanted to be able, so I went to art school and I you know, I studied art and try to show my own work when I can and do other things as an artist myself, so that when I'm talking to students about what their path might look like, I have some real experience myself with that. And hopefully that makes it more genuine for them. But it also, I think, teaches me what I need to know to teach them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So. You know, and I want to ask Liza Sanborn about your experience with Creative Co-Lab and sort of what your part was and any other projects that you worked on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I did it last year, me and Lila and our friends Ellie and Mio. We had a room together, and it was like this old, like, bathroom thing, but, like, the toilets were taken out. And so I got a stall, and I put a bunch of mannequins in it, and I put, like, baby doll parts in it and everything. And that was just a really fun experience because it's, like, it feels very professional. And, like, like Fink said, like, your art's just not hanging up in the hall.
Yeah.
Like, it's an actual room and a thing that you worked on, like, really hard on. And it's just really fun to see the final product.
Because I think oftentimes, you know, seeing work outside of an institution, a museum or art gallery or whatever, you know, I think this offers you a, a more rounded view of where art is, mm-hmm. you know? And how about you, Lila?
Well, doing that room with Liza, I think it gave us an opportunity to do something that we wouldn't be allowed to do at school or in a professional gallery, because a lot of the installation work is it's experimental, like pasting things onto walls using wheat paste or screwing baby doll parts to a stall. I think it's a lot of real-life application for things that you'll end up doing in art school, art college, installation work, just in general.
And I think even, you know, if you go back, as you were saying, you know, taking the baby doll parts and, you know, kind of attaching them to the walls and that sort of thing, I mean, even just coming up with that concept, I think, is pretty mature. I mean, you know, you have to think about the concept and how it's applied, and then how, you know, sort of all those questions that artists have to face and answer, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Sydney, what about you? How was your experience?
Yeah, no, I was lucky enough to get involved freshman year, and I've done it both years that I've been at Shawnee Mission East. There's so much creative freedom with Creative mm-hmm. Collab. It's almost kind of daunting because you can just use the space in kind of whatever way you want. I didn't go overboard with anything. I did like a sculptural rock type thing and mm-hmm. some different watercolors both this year and or last 2 years.
I think certainly the experience is so valuable, you know, as artists, and it allows you the freedom to kind of think and choose and you know, move about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that whole part of it too, kind of having free reign over mm-hmm. a space, mm-hmm. You know, to some degree, it really does encourage and kind of force students, they're not forced to take part, of course, but, mm-hmm. you know, they have to come up with their own idea. They have to connect it to something else that they might be interested in, and then think about how they're going to make that a visual piece, and then think about the logistics. And mm-hmm. I want to say before I forget to say this, that I'm always so proud of them, how they come together and how invested they get mm-hmm. into the project. Mm-hmm. We really start ramping up the project right after spring break, and so every Saturday in April is when we're really installing and cleaning mm-hmm. and doing everything. And like I said, every year I just am so proud of how invested they become, and it really becomes something that's important to them mm-hmm. to finish. And I love it when I can have students that have done it 2 or 3 years, or even 4 sometimes. Because they get to know this, they get to know the space, and mm-hmm. they really have a chance to be leaders as well.
Yeah, and mentors maybe mm-hmm. to students who are just coming into the program. If you just tuned into ArtSpeak Radio, Maria Vasquez Boyd here with Adam Finkelstein and Shawnee Mission East students Lila Palace, Lisa Sanborn, and Sydney William. Liza Sanborn. Yeah. Sorry about that. Oh, I got that look. They're like, oh, Lord, baby. You know, and I also want to mention that Adam is not only the Shawnee Mission East art teacher, but he also, we're going to switch gears, he also is one of the founders mm-hmm. of The Hand Magazine, which is dedicated mm-hmm. to being the world's premier forum for innovative and experimental uses of reproduction-based media. So, How long have you been, because I remember when I first brought you on air, mm-hmm. you just, I think, launched the magazine, so maybe 3-4 years ago?
We just had our 5th anniversary in July.
Gosh, so I lose track of time.
Time flies.
So talk about The Hand Magazine.
Okay, well, it's, like you said, it's a magazine for reproduction-based arts, and so that means printmaking, photography, some collage, and we get work from all over the world. It's printed and distributed out of Kansas City by me, and Then my friend James Mira is also one of the co-editors.
Oh, James. Is he still in town or no?
You know, he's in Providence, Rhode Island now.
Oh, man.
But he and I still work on the magazine together. Yeah. He's a much better designer than I am. So he does a lot of the more design kinds of things for the magazine. And I do more of the administrative kinds of things. But we both edit it together. And we're really, really cruising along with that. It's just kind of growing slowly but surely.
Well,
but
congratulations, because I lose track of time, 5 years. But I also want to mention, I mentioned the Hand magazine because it, again, is one of your babies, but also you have a call for entries that's coming up, right?
Yeah, that's right. November 30th is mm-hmm. the next deadline entry.
And that's for issue number 23 in January 2019. So I can share with you, or if you would share with us the website for more information about that, if people want to take a look at that.
Yeah, it's thehandmagazine.space.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah. So, that deadline is coming up November 30th for issue number 23. And, you know, thank you for that magazine because it's pretty darn gorgeous.
Thanks for mentioning it. Yeah, I appreciate
it. Yeah, yeah. You know, do you have any final words from your students, Adam, about Creative Collab, or just a shout out, or you tell me what last words you have?
Well, I don't know. Do you guys have anything else to say?
If the listeners are interested in checking out work that has been featured before, we have a WordPress website.
Can you pull that closer to you?
Yes. Sorry. We do have a website, so you could check out previous works.
Okay.
As well as keep tabs on us for this year. It's artscaffolding.wordpress.com.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, there's pictures from previous exhibitions and just kind of a lot of, you know, behind the scenes kind of things, you know, pictures of teenagers drilling things into walls and sweeping floors and just all those kind of, like I said, those nitty gritty kinds of things that they get a chance to experience.
But that's true life, you know.
Yeah, right.
So, Sydney, Liza?
Yeah, I mean, we really do spend so many hours on Saturdays in like March and April just down there, and it's all kind of, it's hard to see it, but that last week right before the show, it all comes together, and it's just, it's really amazing.
It's got to feel good, too, right? Yeah. Liza.
Hi, Mom.
I love it. Well, you know, you're welcome back anytime. Bring your students, talk about the Hand magazine more, or whatever you want to do. My door's open, you know that.
I appreciate it, Maria. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet.
Thanks.
Well, now go back to class, you kids. Okay, we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after this. Hello. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd and Barry Lee. Hello, Barry Lee. We love you. He just kind of peeked in the door. But we're very excited. Oops. We're very excited to have... Oops, you're on that one, honey. We're very excited to have Mason Kilpatrick, who's here with Charlotte Street Foundation. He's going to announce all kinds of stuff that's going on with the Charlotte Street Foundation. And, every time I have you on air, Mason, I fail to recognize that you're also an artist yourself. I mean, you're not just Charlotte Street guy, but you do a lot of work in the community and multi-discipline artist, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlotte Street's definitely the bread and butter of what I do.
Sure.
But I definitely also am involved with KKFI.
You can't
overlook that. That's good stuff. Also, I definitely spend a lot of time helping other partners or orgs, such as Open House, which is a Rocket Grant recipient from Charlotte Street Foundation, helping them with social media, as well as Lost Thought Production, which is a queer video production company here in Kansas City. I help them out with in terms of grant writing and stuff like that.
Oh, that's great. So, yeah. Who is with that?
Lost Thought composes of two artists, B. Bekvar and Sakira Hatch, former film students from KCAI. But they, of course, make music videos, and they recently did an open call to make three documentary-esque style videos for artists in Kansas City, since it's very hard for artists to be able to afford proper documentation of their work.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know if Savannah Rogers was with that or not.
Yeah, no.
But I think she's in New York, isn't she?
She is, yeah. Savannah was recently a studio resident at Charlotte Street Foundation, which, if you don't know anything about Charlotte Street Foundation, we offer free studio residency periods for up to 2 years, and most of them consist of 1 year at Charlotte Street. Applications for that open next spring, but we, of course, we help all kinds of artists with our studio residency, from visual artists, performing artists, writers even.
So, yeah. Well, and, you know, and congratulations to Charlotte Street, because y'all have been around since 1997 and supported, like, 94 outstanding visual artists living in Kansas City. There's been unrestricted cash awards, and I think our beautiful Jeff Harshbarger, who follows me next, Jazz Afternoon, was a recipient of that. And
he was. He won the Generative Performing Artist Award.
Yeah, at least he could have bought me a burger or something, you know. But no, we're very proud of him because he is one of the hardest working musicians, you know, in town. But So Charlotte Street does some great things. But you wanted to talk about something specific. Charlotte Street. So, yeah.
I did. And it's actually good that you brought up Jeff Harshbarger, because what Jeff had applied for that year and received was a $10,000 unrestricted cash grant, as you were talking about, for performing artists within Kansas City. So we had this call open for the past month, and it's actually closing this Sunday. But we have two current calls open for visual artists, and then one open for generative performing artists to possibly get $10,000 in unrestricted cash grants to help them towards their work. Of course, the application process is on call for entry, so for artists who are interested, you could possibly find more information on that call at callforentry.org. But what you do is you send in an application, and as long as you're over 18, you're not a college student, and you are here within the Kansas City metro area, you qualify for a chance to win these awards. We give out 3 for visual artists every year. We give out 2 for performing artists every year. And one of the biggest misconceptions that kind of keep artists away are 2 of them. One, that Charlotte Street staff makes the decisions, which actually isn't the case. We bring in visiting jurors from around the nation to come and make these considerations, so you're not having to compete against, you know, any social dramas or,
a pedestal
could be taking place. Yeah. But also, this award goes to and is applied to artists of all career levels. So if you look at the 3 artists who won it last year, Jillian Youngberg, Marie Baron McNerney, and then Jared Mellenbrook, all of them are at various stages of their career, with Jillian being my age and is emerging. So don't let that prevent you from applying, because this, I mean, $10,000 at any level of your career could be great to have.
So, you know, as far as, you know, applying for these awards, what is the criteria? I mean, does the artist have to have somewhat of a plan in place and say, this is what I would like the money for?
I mean, that can definitely be used. That's not necessary. Really, more of it is about the quality of the artist and what development are they possibly going forward towards in the future. I mean, the $10,000 cash rewards is supposed to be used to uplift the artist in any way possible, even like personally in their lives, to help them continue to make excellent or continue to challenge themselves with their work. Also, another really great opportunity are the unspoken kind of benefits, which a lot of people like to overlook because, I mean, money is money and money is great. But these 5 artists who are selected, they also get nonstop marketing promotional help from Charlotte Street through the next year. So whatever events they have, we plug them through and we hook them up with other media conglomerates. But for the 3 visual artists, they also get an exhibition in the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art this in 2019, which is a huge deal for 3 artists to get a museum quality show out of this. So that's also definitely something that if you're wanting to have and have that on your CV, this is a great opportunity to get that.
So the Generative Performing Artist Award that was launched in 2008 parallels the program to the Visual Artist Awards, and so the sort of the categories would be work in the fields of dance, theater,
So
music, performance, spoken word, and a hybrid of interdisciplinary performance-based forms, right?
That's what's really great about the GPA Award is that it really goes towards literally anything you could even not possibly think of for performing arts. The real only qualification of that is because it's generative performing, you have to be making new contemporary work. So if you are a performing artist of any field and you're creating something new, you will qualify for this award. Last year, the two applicants who won were Sean Hansen, who is a great experimental musician, and Marcus Lewis, who is great, doing great new work right now. But they're both two very different styles, so that kind of shows you the kind of like leeway that you have in terms of applying for the award.
Well, folks really want to take a look at this or see past winners or recipients and all that. Share with us the website and any other sort of information that they may need to know.
Yeah, of course. No, so you can definitely go to www.charlottestreet.org to learn more if you're interested about this. That website not only houses all of our events in the application for these awards, but you can also see the other various different types of awards that we also offer. If you're also interested, you can follow us on Facebook at Charlotte Street, Twitter at Charlotte Street, and then also on Instagram at Charlotte Street Foundation.
Now, is there a contact person there that someone may want to talk to over the phone or maybe meet in person if they have, you know, if they don't have internet access? Because, you know, the assumption is that we all have internet access, and, you know,
which is not true.
Which is not true.
That's a very good point. We do have, you can actually call our phone number in our office. And you can also consult with me as well. So I'm the marketing manager. I would give you my email. It's mason@charlottestreet.org. But if you don't have internet access, you can also call me at 620-899-6508. So that's definitely one thing in terms of, like, communicating with me directly. We also have an office number that's open, and that's 816-221-5115.
Now, and then the offices are located at 3325 Wyoming?
Yes, we recently just moved. We're actually about to put some new vinyl onto the building to make it actually seem like it's us. But that's over in the Roanoke area. It's kind of behind the Quick Trip on Southwest Boulevard. In that area, by like Carthage Stoneworks and Huffed.
Because, you know, I when I looked at that, I thought, okay, I know we're Wyoming, and then I was trying to place it. So, in the Roanoke sort of area. Now, is there, can people just kind of drop in, or is there someone at the office all day? Or?
We have office hours. So if you have questions about these awards, you can actually stop by our office hours from Tuesday to Friday. We're closed to the public on Mondays. But of course, you can also set appointments with us by calling or emailing. But you can also just walk in from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and consult with us about that.
Okay, because I think that would be helpful for some people that, you know, sometimes even with the internet, they're looking at the application process. Sometimes that can be overwhelming for folks. So.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. We get consultations all the time, especially when it comes to high-stakes awards like this one, you know, technical errors or mishaps. An artist had already emailed me about a problem with application. So if you are encountering that, feel free to, of course, stop by the office in person, call me or email us, and we'll help you out.
And we want to be mindful, again, that the Charlotte Street Foundation, the call for applications for 2019 Visual Artist Awards and Generative Performing Artist Awards, the deadline is Sunday, November 18th. At 11:59 p.m. Mountain Time.
Yeah, it's weird. Mountain Time. Because that's where the call facility is hosted that we run it through. So you actually get a little bit of an extra hour there, but you should still try it again by midnight of Sunday here, just to give you an extra hour of leeway.
But how do you know how artists, how we work?
Oh, it's like, I know.
Let's see, 11:59. Oh, I'm quick. Yeah. Done at 11:58.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've all done that.
Yep, been there, done that as well personally as well.
As the oil paint is dripping off onto the floor.
Another really thing to point out, too, is that these applications are also free. They don't cost. Sometimes with other organizations, you have to pay like $10 to $50 to apply. There is no application fee here, so you really have nothing to lose. And if you were to not get the award this year, there's also nothing stopping you from continuously applying as you as an artist continue to grow and develop.
I have a question for you, and I don't know whether you'll have the answer or not, but say, you know, this application went through and then you were sort of denied. Does that applicant have the opportunity to say, you know, what was missing or what did I need? I mean, I'm just curious.
Yeah, of course. No, so how that goes is you can contact Patrick Alexander, who is our programming manager. Pat is actually overseeing the application process and guiding the jurors along with Amy Kligman. In terms of follow-up, when you are getting the news of whether you did or did not get the award, you can actually email and consult with Pat to possibly get notes from jurors on that.
So that might be helpful. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that might be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, the process is trying to make these resources as accessible as possible, but we also want this to be as educational as possible for artists who either get the award or don't, because we just want the arts community to improve as a whole. So making this process as equal and as beneficial for the artists is a goal of ours. So,
you know, Mason, we love you. We thank you for all your hard work that you do with Charlotte Street Foundation.
We love you too.
Well, and the work that you do here with KKFI, and you know, and balancing everything else that you do in your private life with your art and, you know, performance and all of that. So thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
I know you'll be back.
Well, we sure will. We'll have more calls and opportunities to hype.
Oh, great. We love that. And I also want to thank Andres Rodriguez, Jamie Heller, Adam Finkelston, Lila Palace, Liza Sanborn, Sydney William from Shawnee Mission East School. And next week, we'll be back. We'll be back with you. I'm hoping to get a whole line of musicians on air to perform live because, that's just what I want to do. So that's next week, November 21st. We're really, really skipping through November, aren't we? So I invite you to stay tuned next for Jazz Afternoon with our beautiful, lovely, award-winning Jeff Harshbarger, who did not buy me a burger, by the way. Oh, look, he went in. And hold on there. Jeff. Sorry about that, folks. I had to let Jeff in. Little dead air. So, you know, he's going to be with you spinning some tunes next hour from 1 to 3, and then Groovy Grant comes on 3 to 6. I want to thank you all so much for tuning in today. We love having you. We love being in your ears. So, thank you so very much. And you know what? Say it with me, honey. I'm coming home.